This is Garen, you're listening to Fuck, and shit, everyone just punk rock out, listen to the Santa Cruz shit.
Hi, this is Jello Biafra. You're tired of propaganda and boring music on the radio? Well, there is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 on your radio dial, unless your radio was made in America.
Next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides with special guests Scott and Alicia. No last names, please. Stay with us. We also have interviews coming up that are going to rock you and sock you. At 11:45, Sally Zinman will be talking about forced treatment in a special interview from Berkeley. At 11 o'clock, we will have council member Dave Mersev on from Arcata, talking about the Patriot Act and the harassment of the homeless in Arcata. And at 10:30, two Arcata activists will be talking, an ACLU member and a man who has been arrested repeatedly for trying to establish a place for poor people to sleep in Arcata. Lots of stuff happening on Bathrobe Spears Broadsides this morning, the August 10th, 2003 show. Stay with us.
Only one reason that president raises the question, who owns a land? The homeless are a problem. For only one reason a president raises the question, who owns a land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Should it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Gonna be 6 million Jews. Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? To our imperialism. Who owns the land? Will someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be who owns the land. Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Native American, who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me who owns the land? 'Cause I am just a white man who owns the land. 'Cause I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Maybe it's me and you. Maybe it's not the corporation. Owns its own self. Maybe it's the Native America. The homeless are a problem for only one reason. My president raises a question: who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Your president raises a question: who owns the land? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home?
And welcome to the Sunday Bathrobe Spears Broadsides show. It's hot both inside and out, and we got a fast show moving here. We're going to try to roll right ahead. In the studio with us, Scott and Alicia. Scott, a medical marijuana patient who's just been involved, at least within the last year, in a federal case. And since I'm also going to be trying to slip in time to read the latest update on Todd McAree, the subject of persecution up in the Bay Area by the feds and the local state cohorts who are colluding with the feds. I think it's important we do a little bit of that, but also Scott is here with Alicia, who has her own tale to tell. I'm going to introduce the two of them. Hi, Scott. And hi, Alicia.
Hi.
So who wants to start, and what would you two like to talk about?
Concerned about the McAree thing because Todd is my doctor and I have my recommendation from him, and Todd is he's a great man and a really caring doctor. He's been to my home and to check on my daughter, who for a long time was the youngest medical marijuana patient in the state at age 6. Maybe some of the people remember Joy in her wheelchair here in downtown. And you just reminded me of my own federal case because you informed me that I was again violating federal law here, and
here in the studio, you mean?
Well, I guess so, and actually that's a very comforting thing. I mean, I feel comfortable again. It makes me feel normal again. But I was up in the Sierras in Plumas County, where I used to live. It's been almost 2 years camping up there in the National Forest, and the sheriff of Plumas County knows my daughter. He knows about the medical marijuana. He knows I've got marijuana on me at all times. He knows I was giving it to my 6-year-old. And it was no problem. So I thought, I was still in the state of California. I'm still there in Plumas County. I'm sitting outside my motorhome. The baby, my little boy, Sativa. Some of you may remember him. He's 3 now. And he's asleep in the motorhome, and I'm just smoking some of my medicine. I had some, it was just real crap Mexican. And I had about 2.5 grams of it. And federal law enforcement, Roger Norton, I believe he's sure familiar to any of you who have been to the Rainbow Gatherings. And he comes by and busts me for smoking my medicine. he takes my Chinese stash box and he takes my medicine. And I said, my God, you're not going to take me to jail, are you, over this? And he said, well, under federal law, it's a zero tolerance, a year in jail, $100,000 fine. And I just started laughing and said, had at it, have at it. And the interesting thing about it all is that I went to court. We went to the in front of a federal magistrate in Chester, up there in the Sierras, and they had to hire a federal lawyer for me and pay her. And the second time we went back to court, my lawyer came back to me and said, they refused to recognize your recommendation. On the other hand, usually we send people to diversion, but you need this stuff, don't you? And I said, well, yeah, you know, I don't have it, I don't eat, and kind of waste away. And she said, so what they want to do is, they said, if you'll donate $250 to the charity of your choice, they'll make it go all away. And the charges will just disappear.
Just a little something for a local friend, huh?
Yeah, well, they let me choose the charity. I gave it $250 to the Plumas County Child Abuse Prevention Council. And so they did put me through the ringer, and now we did threaten them with Earth First. I said, y'all, you know, you never had Earth First over here in the Sierras. I do have a lot of friends in trees over in Humboldt, and we could probably put on a big demonstration in the parking lot out here over this medical marijuana issue, because I know a lot of potheads up here in the Sierras, and this kind of pisses them off. They're angry. And I don't know how much good that did, but the thing was that while they didn't recognize it, at the same time, they actually did. But I'm worried, gee, if they take Todd's license away, is that going to invalidate my recommendation? I'm going to have to get it, because he's been so... We went through hell with the cops with my little girl. I mean, at one point they said we were over at Stanford University trying to get some treatment for her, and they sent six cops out, two of them with their guns drawn, out to our motorhome to, you know, try and take us all away. And it was Todd's recommendations that saved us.
Well, maybe what I should do, Scott, is read the story in the Anderson Valley Advertiser, which came out on August 6th.
Kind of that rag?
Yeah, Anderson Boonville rag. You can actually buy this rag at various places around town. I suggest the Book Loft, the Capitola Book Cafe, or if they'll let you in without arresting you, Neil Coonerty's Bookshop Santa Cruz. It also carries it. It's an interesting. Fred Gardner writes an article under a column called Cannabis Notes. And it's headed Micaria's motion denied. Administrative law judge Jonathan Liu has rejected a motion to dismiss the state medical board's case against Todd Micaria. The Berkeley psychiatrist who has approved cannabis use by some 7,500 patients in recent years will have to defend his handling of 17 cases at a hearing that's scheduled to start September 3rd in Oakland. According to Micaria, all the patients involved have benefited from cannabis use and none have reported adverse effects. In case you've just joined us, the Medical Board of California is the state agency that issues licenses to physicians and can revoke or suspend them. Micaria, who will turn 70 next month, not only approves cannabis use by patients, he has devoted his whole career to studying its applications. In 1995-96, he was a medical advisor to the organizers of the Proposition 215 campaign. When it passed into law and drug czar Barry McCaffrey warned California doctors not to recommend marijuana, he specifically ridiculed Micaria's claims as to its versatility and usefulness in a wide range of conditions. Following a lengthy investigation in which the board subpoenaed files that the patients involved did not want to provide, Micaria was accused of unprofessional conduct and gross negligence based on his allegedly inadequate records, superficial examinations, lack of follow-up, etc. Micaria's lawyers filed a motion to dismiss the accusation, relying heavily on the argument that Proposition 215 conferred, quote, absolute immunity on doctors who recommend marijuana. They cited the law created by 215, which states, quote, notwithstanding any other provision of law, no physician in this state shall be punished or denied any right or privilege for having recommended marijuana to a patient for medical purposes, unquote. Judge Liu, in a ruling issued August 4th, distinguished between a recommendation to use marijuana and the process by which the doctor decides to issue the recommendation. A doctor can't be punished for making the recommendation, according to Liu, but can be punished for failing to take certain steps in arriving at the decision. The immunity afforded physicians under Health and Safety Code Sections 1136.2.5 appears to be conditional, wrote Liu. It is presumed that physicians who recommend marijuana under the Act will follow accepted medical practice standards. Will follow accepted medical practice standards and make good faith recommendations based on honest medical judgments. Complainant, the Attorney General on behalf of the Medical Board, correctly notes that to hold otherwise and to extend absolute immunity to physicians would allow them to simply issue recommendations without the exercise of sound medical judgment and with no oversight. The absolute immunity argument has always seemed problematic to your correspondent. That's Fred Garner writing this article. Let's say a 37-year-old man in generally good physical health who's been using cannabis for chronic anxiety tells a doctor for whom he hopes to get a letter of approval that he's had a painful stomach ache for the past 8 hours. Isn't the doctor obligated to advise him, after ruling out food poisoning and other possible cases, that there's a chance it could be acute appendicitis? The doctor should also suggest a treatment plan, i.e., if the pain doesn't abate by a certain time, he should visit his regular doctor or an emergency room. A doctor with absolute immunity could fail to take these steps and yet would bear no responsibility if the patient winds up near death poisoned by a burst appendix. Common sense tells us that wouldn't be right. Lou's decision re absolute immunity came as bad news to Mikaria. There'll be more precious days spent in the courtroom, tremendous expense, the constant looming fear of forced retirement if he loses. But it sets the stage for a courtroom fight from which evidence as to the safety and efficacy of cannabis can be introduced. As Lou himself put it, the applicable standard of practice in this case will be established by expert testimony. If the testimony is truly science-based, Mikaria gets exonerated. At a July 11th settlement conference, Mikaria was told that if he did not accept the board's offer, multiple insults, including 7 years probation, remedial training, another doctor monitoring his practice, and fines in excess of $30,000, they would add a charge stemming from his treatment of an undercover officer in January of this year. As Mikaria tells it, a man I now know to be Detective Steve Gossett of the Sonoma County Task Force infiltrated a clinic in Oakland organized by a third party. He presented fraudulent ID as Scott Burris and made deceptive statements on his intake form and to me about recurrent shoulder pain, which he said was relieved by cannabis. I recommended physical therapy and advised him to vaporize instead of smoking. Mikaria hopes that the upcoming hearing will give his lawyers a chance to find out who sicked Detective Gossett on him and why. I have been targeted by a coven of criminals acting under color of authority, says Mikaria. I want to figure out their organizational chart. At its August 1st hearing, or meeting, the medical board was supposed to hear a report from the head of its enforcement division confirming or denying a serious charge leveled by pro-cannabis physicians who had been investigated by the board. The docs, three of whom were in attendance, had charged that all the complaints, subjecting them to costly, frightening, demeaning, time-consuming investigations, had come from law enforcement, and that none of the complaints even alleged that they had caused harm to a patient. At the previous meeting of the MBC, Medical Board of Control, held in Sacramento in May, Chief Investigator Dave Thornton had reassured the board that complaints against the pro-cannabis docs had not come exclusively from law enforcement. The only exception, Thornton said, he could recall was a complaint from a parent. Thornton said it was directed to review the relevant files and report back. Only 9 or 10 doctors had been investigated in connection with marijuana recommendations, according to Thornton, so it was a finite task. Thornton didn't remind the board in May that he would be retired by August, so it was the new chief, Joan Jerzak, who testified August 1st that the report promised by her predecessor was not available. Steve Alexander, a non-MD member of the board, tried to impress the significance of the report on Jerzak. She promised to have it by the November meeting. Two recent decisions by the board highlight the inconsistency of their charging policy. At the end of May, Mike Alkaly, MD, got a one-sentence notice that he would not be charged. The board had investigated his treatment of an 8-year-old boy whose uncontrollable, violent behavior was about to result in his removal to a residential treatment center. Alkaly wrote a recommendation for cannabis based on a review of the boy's medical records plus many hours of phone contact with the mother, but no face-to-face interview with the boy. On July 25th, Frank Lucido, M.D., learned that the board's case against him was being forwarded to the Attorney General for possible prosecution. Lucido's patient was a 16-year-old, almost 17, whose hyperactivity disorder, quote-unquote, had been treated unsuccessfully with Ritalin, Prozac, lithium, and other pharmaceuticals, which either didn't work or caused unacceptable side effects. Lucido, after a face-to-face examination, recommended cannabis, which enabled the young man to attend school, get excellent grades, and to hold down a part-time job. Of course, he's the guy that gets sent to the Attorney General for prosecution. Naturally, you don't want to show marijuana having good effects. Any thoughts on any of this, Alicia, Scott?
Well, I'm not used to where I'm from. They don't even have the chance of having medical marijuana, so I think you're pretty lucky here. So what you can get away with is pretty nice, because otherwise, in Nebraska, you would be put away in jail for at least 30 years is the most that you'd be put in jail.
So there are no cannabis clubs in Nebraska?
No. A lot of people haven't even heard of them.
Do any people you know take marijuana for medical conditions?
I knew one person who had medical marijuana, but it wasn't what is here. It was a pill, and it really wasn't anything. It was basically a sugar pill. Make people think that they're okay.
Well, we began, this is sort of a kind of a sidetrack. I know that when I ran into you on the Pacific Garden Mall, garden is, of course, a misnomer these days, the Pacific Police Mall, I should call it, you had some thoughts that you kind of wanted to bring to the station, as well as you, Scott, on, I guess, how Santa Cruz has changed and what you see happening here, any experiences you've had here. Would you like to talk about anything in that realm?
Well, I was here last year, and I was the so-called homeless. I was having a lot of fun. I liked being able to camp out wherever I wanted. It was nice. But, of course, I didn't get away with it. But I got a lot of my stuff ruined because of it, which I don't think is necessary. But
how did that happen?
Well, I was camping in Camp Paradise, and the cops came while I was gone. And since nobody was there, they decided that instead of giving out camping tickets, that it would be okay for them to destroy all my stuff.
You know, it's interesting. I've just heard from one of my deep throat informants on the street, who actually also was involved in Camp Paradise when it was going. I guess it was actually, it was 2001 was the time for Camp Paradise. Camp Paradise, it's been a while since Camp Paradise was up. Mm-hmm. 2001 and then into 2002, and then I guess in 2002 it got sent off to the county, and then there was things happening there. But what my informant told me was that Poverty Hill and Carbonera Creek have been swept by the police in the last couple of weeks, maybe even the last couple of days. I haven't got the exact time on that. And that 8 to 10 people's tents and property were compacted, destroyed, and removed without any kind of warning. So apparently what happened to you, this happened last year to you?
Yeah.
It's happening again this year. It's sort of a traditional summer process where people are treated like trash, or that's to say their possessions, their property, their survival gear is treated like trash.
Mm-hmm.
You specifically lost property?
Oh, yeah.
And did the police warn you about what they were going to do?
No, I wasn't there.
Did they post any notices?
Oh, the only notice I got was all my stuff in a pile. And it wasn't just mine. It was a lot of other people's stuff, too. Tents, everything was pushed into one pile that was over, I mean, it was just in a corner. It urinated on. I don't know if they did it. I doubt they did, but other people had. But
wow, and this where were you camped?
Let's see, Camp Paradise. I couldn't tell you the exact location, but it was just, you know, right behind the cemetery.
So this was this Camp Paradise when Larry Templeton was still running it, or was this Camp Paradise after he was gone?
It was after he was gone, because I met some people when I first got here that were starting it up again. And it was nice, because there was not very many people there, but it got out of extreme, so.
It got what?
Into extreme. It was not controllable. People were going out of control, doing stupid things, getting themselves in trouble.
So you think that the police and the people living there prompted the police raid by inappropriate behavior? Or?
Oh, yeah.
What kind of behavior was that?
Well, I knew two people who got drunk, and they decided to beat up a Hispanic person, not because they really did anything wrong, but just because they were Hispanic. And then they came down to the campground, or to Camp Paradise, and found out that they weren't Hispanic, they were Latino, and they were really mad, and they said they could either do it their way, or they could call the police. And they were...
Wait, what's the difference between Hispanic and Latino? Clue me in here.
Well, I mean, they were making fun of him. They were making fun of him and beating him up just because he was Mexican.
Right.
But he wasn't even Mexican.
I see.
But they said they could either do it their way or they could bring the cops in. But there was a lot of girls there, so they just got the cops, and they got away with it for some reason. So, but they decided.
The individual who had been beaten complained to the police that he was beaten, but the police wouldn't take a complaint or didn't take any action to rectify the situation?
Well, they came to Camp Paradise, but they didn't have enough evidence that anything even happened.
I see.
Even though the bruises weren't enough, but...
How many people were using the area?
At least... A lot of them were couples, and there was at least 10 couples. And what all over the place.
And would you say that there was a couple of incidents, or would you say that there was sufficient? Could the group of people who gathered there, perhaps community is a little strong, but the collection of folks have dealt with it, or do you think it required police intervention? And do you think the dispersal of the camp was a good idea?
Well, I think that camp was fine. We weren't hurting anybody. The animals around the place were depending on us because they didn't have anything to eat. It was the river's kind of, it's not very healthy. And so it was actually good. I mean, we cleaned the whole place up. It had all sorts of stuff that you could think of that were around, and we cleaned it all up. And so they should have been glad that we did that. But we just took advantage of the fact that, you know, it was a free place to camp.
Have you been back sent to Camp Paradise this year, the Camp Paradise area?
No, I haven't been back there yet. Mm-hmm. I heard that a murder happened there, so I...
About 6 months before your last visit, so it had happened. I mean, there were actually two killings on the river by a guy. Well, a guy was convicted of the two killings. Kenny, I guess, was... I'm not quite sure what the... Let me see if I got the guy's name here in my little notebook. There were two killings... One was, let me get this here. I thought I had it here. I don't think it was at Camp Paradise that the two killings happened. One was, they were down the river a bit. There was a killing at Camp Paradise of a one-armed man.
Yeah, that's the one I told her about.
That was sometime. That was, no, the fall before last. It was,
They're just prosecuting him now. But
oh, really? Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, it was just last fall.
Because I thought it was January 2002 when the arrest happened, and this is now, you know, summer 2003.
No, I think you're a year off, but...
Could be. But in any case, it's interesting to get these updates. I'm kind of pressed for time, so I'm going to ask you to kind of hang with me and sort of... You're welcome to stay, both of you, as long as you'd like, and possibly serve as commentary and... some additional voices. We have a call-in number here for those who want to call into the show. The number is 831-427-3772. Again, 831-427-3772. When someone is on the line in a phone interview, we're going to have three long phone interviews in the course of the next 3 hours. You can't get into the studio since we only have one line, but you can get in through email. So if you want to email me, you can. And that's rnorse@hotmail.com, rnorse@hotmail.com. I'm going to run through a couple things quickly before I start the next segment of the show, which is going to be a tape of the November 12th, 2002 City Council meeting's discussion of the Patriot Act Free Zone Resolution. That's one way of describing it, that was passed in crippled and weakened form, and which was actually the stimulus for the formation of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, Santa Cruz Bill of Rights Defense Committee, one of many such committees formed throughout the country, but our local committee, which is now trying to get the City Council to put the teeth back into the Patriot Act resolution, and there are also some other things on its agenda as well. One of them is supporting civil rights locally in Santa Cruz. For example, the abolition of the move-along law that makes it illegal to have a political table or display device for more than 60 minutes in any one spot in a business district. Sort of one of these merchants rule kind of laws. They can do whatever they want, but the rest of us get to walk very carefully and keep our credit cards with us at all times. So this city council meeting is going to be discussing the reviewing the public debate around the Patriot Act, how it got cut off and eviscerated, who did it, and now, of course, how that can be rectified, and also how that can be related, and this is what's most important to me, to restoring civil rights at a local level, because frankly, though I certainly oppose the Patriot Act, and I'd like to see the U.S., the Santa Cruz area, a Patriot Act-free area, and I'm glad to see initiatives against the federal government's repression. Unless you oppose repression locally as well, it is all a pretty theoretical exercise, particularly if your allies are some of the people repressing people locally. That's the thing. So if you're supporting Mayor Emily Riley, who stepped up a big campaign to get rid of Camp Paradise by increasing the enforcement along the riverbank and making it illegal for people to park in the Harvey West, and supporting citywide permit parking all over the place, so that if you park a vehicle anywhere at night after January 1st in many of these zones, you're going to be towed unless you have a permit particularly designed to harass homeless people. It's acknowledged in the Public Works staff report that created this plan. If you support local politicians who are supporting the downtown ordinances that make it illegal for people to sit on 95% of the sidewalk, or peacefully ask for a dime after dark, or peacefully hold up a sign asking for change if they're in a seated position, then you are supporting repression of civil liberties. And however pious their statements are about how they oppose national repression, it's the most bald hypocrisy. Any comments on this, Scott and Alicia?
Well, no, but I just had one comment about Todd Micaria, and that every pothead in California needs a medical recommendation. It's preventative medicine. What could possibly be worse for your client or patient's health than going to jail? So that was a comment I had on that.
Sure, and it should also be said, and I've said this many times on the air, that the same clowns at City Hall who made a big to-do about fighting the feds on the issue of medical marijuana, Chris Crone and company, and Mike Rodkin, and the whole gang of council turned out for the national press conference last fall, have done absolutely nothing to decriminalize marijuana locally, at least as far as zoning goes, so that, for example, clubs like Santa Cruz Cannabis Pharmaceuticals and other cannabis users clubs are allowed back in the city in areas that they can actually locate in. In 2000, Rotkin and Fitzmaurice and others put together zoning regulations in collusion with Valerie Corral and Mike Corral, otherwise fine people, that made it fine for WHAM to do what it's doing, but essentially choked to death other medical marijuana clubs. That's my understanding from talking to three other advocates, although there's some controversy. In theory, they can set up somewhere, but the restrictions are so tight and so difficult, and the process is so vulnerable to harassment, that you just don't have any medical marijuana clubs in Santa Cruz, other than WHAM, which is, you know, serves 275 people, but it has a huge waiting list, and the 2,000 to 3,000 people that need marijuana have to go scrambling for it elsewhere.
Well, you know, Robert, people in Santa Cruz, and not all of them, but the good liberals of Santa Cruz, the good white liberals, care very passionately about the plight of the poor and the plight of the homeless and the plight of the disabled. They just don't want them in their town.
Yeah, and apparently medical marijuana users, you know, can line up for a card in 2008 with WHAM, or until then, keep looking on the levee for their medical marijuana. I'd like to see somebody like Sarah Phelan, who writes endless medical marijuana articles in the Metro Santa Cruz, actually write something about what's going on in Santa Cruz. But apparently there's some people who are sacred cows who cannot be touched, and that's a real problem. Valerie Corral has been invited on the show, as have Mike, different times. They've been invited to respond to these issues. They don't do it, and they don't have to. You know, it's like the city council. They can ignore criticism. It's too bad. So I promise we're going to play a bit of this tape. I'm going to do it now. I was also going to play a bit of the Illegal to Be Homeless press conference that we had on Tuesday, which was a nice little conference. But here we have a phone call. Let's see what that's all about. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. Theodora.
Hey, Theodora.
Yeah, I just want to remind folks that 215 did not make it legal to dispense marijuana. Mm-hmm. And what's really happening in this community is that, the way I see it, is that people who are medical patients, one, there's a fair amount of supply in this town, so without a dispensary, there is plenty of marijuana out there. But the other thing is that most people who are marijuana users are not particularly politically inclined. And to expect the good liberals to pick up the fight for you is lazy politics.
You're here.
And so I know you have your issues with Val, and, you know, that's legitimate. But she has definitely put her life, she and her partner have put their life and their property on the line to make something happen that does come under the auspices of 215, and they've done a lot for the issue. I see a lot of marijuana patients and marijuana users complaining about, you know, things aren't the way they should be. But, you know, the only reason we got to the point where we are in California and in Santa Cruz is because people, myself included, took time out of our own lives at great, you know, loss of income and whatnot to push things along. And if people really want to see shift happen, then they've got to, you know, they've got to belly up to the bar and make it happen instead of complaining that people who have other issues they're working on aren't working on the issue they want them to work on.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a legitimate.
I think it's very legitimate. I get tired of the whining that I see.
But are you suggesting that I'm whining?
Not well. It's you're beating the same dead horse in the sense that I, you know, to hold Valerie and Mike responsible for work, for not doing work. They've done their work. They've worked to get some protection for what they're doing and what their co-op is doing in the community. The clubs that were here and got shut down, none of those people, none of the patients, none of the people who are funding the clubs really ever got out on the street to do the political work. They wanted, you know, they wanted to walk in and set up their dispensary and make lots and lots of money, but they never wanted to do the political work to back it up like Val and Mike have.
Well, I heard from, you know, various people who were involved in that club, thinking specifically of Kate Wells, who's been on the show, the club in 2000, although you pointed out many of the problems that these clubs have had, and legitimately so. They tried to be a part of the political process. The only person allowed into the August Council inner circles was Valerie and Mike. And then they set up this.
Because
that's my understanding. Unless were you invited
into
in?
Those circles without doing the political work. And opening a club and making money does not qualify as political work. It qualifies as taking advantage of a good situation. And even though intentions may be, you know, may have been good on Kate's part, whatnot, I was close enough to both of these clubs to see that the ulterior motive was money. And, you know, they weren't co-ops in any sense of the word. People who had good ideas to make these clubs more inclusive of, you know, and do more support work were often just kicked out the door because they were challenging, you know, the ones who wanted to make the money. You know, so you live and die by your inability to really get out on the street and do the work on behalf of the issue that you want to, you know, what you want to see accomplished.
What about you know, the 500 to, well, I should say 2,000 to 3,000 people who can't be accommodated by WAM? You know, I mean, that's my concern.
WAM gives us the right to grow our own. Okay, I mean, that's one of the revolutionary things about 215, is that you have a right to grow your own medicine or have work with somebody who can grow it for you. Lots of people don't want to do that because they'd much rather walk into a club and pay their money and have it, you know, and then they complain that that doesn't happen.
Well, a lot of people don't grow their own food either. I mean, you know, come on.
Well, it's a step in the right direction, but I'm just saying, yeah. You want to take it all the way, you got to do the political work instead of sit on your butt smoking your marijuana and complaining.
Well, I saw people in the summer of 2000 trying to do political work, lobbying the city council, and I saw city council locking them out and only talking to the corral. See, that was my, and did they talk to you?
Well, I didn't try and make myself part of the process because one of the things that wore me out in terms of being an activist on this issue was the vast majority of the people saying, rah, 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 you know, do it, do it, do it, didn't want to take the time to show up, didn't want to take the time to support the issue, didn't, you know, they never had any money to support the activists, but, you know, they had plenty of money to support their habits. And I just got really tired of the whole thing. And Val and Mike, to their credit, have been two people who've stayed there, taken the risks, helped a lot of people along the way. And I, you know, I don't want to see them made the problem when the problem really is people will not get off their butts and work the issue. And that doesn't mean just working.
Well, I think
nothing
I am
ever
working
happened
the
in this community because people lobbied the city council. What happened in this community is people like myself went out to the various places where people gathered, had booths on a regular level, educated the population, became known in the community, and out of that built, you know, built a you know, built a force to be reckoned with. At that point, you go to the city managers and the county managers, and they recognize that you do represent a population. Having a good idea will never get you very far down the road in politics, but showing that you can marshal support in the community and get out there and get people to show up, that counts big time. And I don't see anybody but the Corrals doing that groundwork. And again, I see lots of people saying the way it should be, but I don't see them backing it up with daily commitment.
Legitimate criticism, but I think it's also true that to speak the truth about the issue is not a discredit, even if, for example, we've reached the point where the Corrals do have a lot of power. I think if they came out on this issue differently, I think the city council would act differently. And frankly, I think it's important for the people who don't have the time and resources to grow their own marijuana and who don't want to risk, for example, getting a felony prosecution for either, you know, purchasing it or selling a small quantity to someone else downtown, as is happening all the time. I mean, there's a drug war on, and I can't agree with you more that we need, you know, to give credit to the work people have done, yourself, and I support the Corrals in terms of their struggle with the federal government. I just find it when people get a lot of local power, and they have a lot of local power, I'm afraid that's the truth, in local government, I expect them to use it responsibly for the broader community, and frankly, I disagree with you. I don't think it is being used responsibly, so we have a difference of opinion.
Well, again, if you don't, you know, those people, and I know you're busy with your issues, and I would never put it on you to be the one, but, you know, I just... You know for all the people who use medical marijuana in this community, the dearth of political activity that's really grounded in work and effort does not happen, and complaints big time do, and they always point at the Corrals like the Corrals should do it for me.
I think we should blame you instead. This next time we'll blame you, Theodore.
Well, you know, and that won't get you very far either.
Scott has a comment. Do you want to question, perhaps?
I think I talked to you a few years ago about my daughter Joy, Theodora, but and I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but the fact is a lot of us who use medical marijuana, I'm pretty healthy, but you know, I've got some things going on, but a lot of people that use it are really quite sick and not really able to mount, you know, a political offensive. And I also, I got to kind of object to your use of the term habit, people supporting their habit. I mean, if I'm using medical marijuana, I'm taking medication, I haven't got a drug habit.
I agree. I was the wrong choice of words,
okay.
But I know plenty of medical marijuana patients who are not dying on the vine, as it were. I'm not expecting people who are in bed with cancer and AIDS to get up and do this work, but it didn't take very many of us to put the whole issue on the map before the Corrals came along, and it doesn't take many people to do, to do the work, but it takes, you know, it takes real commitment and real dedication, and I have not, you know, again, I've been working on this since the early 90s, and I've heard lots of words, and I've seen very little in the way of action, and I got tired of being the motivator, so I backed down, and I have literally, I've seen is people wanting to rise up and make money off of the whole thing, but I have not seen people.
This is America. Let's not forget.
You know,
I
willing to get out there and do the political organizing,
right.
And that's just, you know, I can only comment on it. There's plenty of, you know, people using medical marijuana who are not, you know, sick in a way that they can't get out and do things.
Of course, the broader thing you pointed out many times, Theodora, as well, is that we need to link this to a broader struggle against the drug war. That this whole canonization of medical marijuana as necessitating our focus has taken away the broader focus from the absurdity and the criminality and the total, you know, destruction of resources that comes with the drug war itself. So.
And that's true. And the other thing I wanted to mention, if a good number of the 7,500 people who have benefited from Dr. Micaria's recommendations were to get together and in some way or in their various communities organize benefits and get the issue out there in a broader way, but that doesn't happen.
There's an ad in the current Anderson Valley Advertiser, as well as the article I read, which suggests to people things they can do. And if you want to pick up this issue, the Anderson Valley Advertiser,
I'll definitely look. It's an excellent.
Check it out.
It's an excellent column, and it's in there regularly. And he has a wonderful overview of what is going on.
I've got to roll into this next segment.
Okay.
Theodore, forgive me, and thank you for calling.
Thanks for raising the issue.
Thank you. Bye bye. And we're going to roll immediately now to the November 12th City Council meeting of last year and the Patriot Act discussion, just so people can get a hear. Here we go.
Okay, we are going to move on now to item number 20. This is subject is a resolution opposing parts of the USA Patriot Act and certain Justice Department directives and executive orders. It's a recommendation before the council from myself that the City Council adopt a resolution opposing parts of the USA Patriot Act and certain Justice Department directives and executive orders. This has been something that's been brought to my attention by folks in the community. There are now 13 cities who have passed a similar ordinance throughout our country. The resolution cites specific parts of our Bill of Rights and our Constitution, rights that are threatened given the Patriot Act, which was passed actually by a vote of 356-66 in our U.S. House. So without continuing this, I'm going to see if there's any questions from council members first, and I'm going to go to the public if there aren't any questions.
To review some of the concerns I had regarding the Patriot Act. It specifically reversed the freedom of association, freedom in which allowed the government to monitor religious and political institutions without suspecting criminal activity to assist terror investigation. It reversed the freedom of information, freedom of speech, freedom of right to legal representation, freedom of unreasonable searches, right to a speedy and public trial, and a right to liberty. There are actually 22 other cities around the country that are currently considering a resolution like ours. We could be number 14, and possibly there's a snowball effect of another 22 on their way. I would very much like to recommend that you pass this act. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I did want to say before the next speaker, after consulting with our police chief through our city attorney on page 21-2, I have alternate language for number 4. I just wanted to pass that out and read it so people can comment on it if they wish. Number 4 in our proposal, the new language. Well, I'll read both since I don't know if anybody, members of the public, have it in front of them. Directs that to the extent legally possible, no city of Santa Cruz employee or department official assist or voluntarily cooperate with investigations, interrogations, or arrest procedures, public or clandestine, that are judged to be in violation of the individual's civil rights or civil liberties as specified in the resolution. And I'm suggesting we change that to the city of Santa Cruz urges federal law enforcement officials working within the city to engage only in legally permissible law enforcement activities which do not violate the civil rights and civil liberties of the people of Santa Cruz. To this end, organizations should not be monitored based solely on their religious or political views, and no information about political, religious, or social views, associations, or activities should be collected unless the information relates to public safety concerns or reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. So I've changed that part, number 4. Next speaker. Excuse me, city attorney.
Yeah, our recommendation was actually to delete paragraph 4 because it gives direction to the city employees directly from the city council, and that sort of raises questions under the city charter. And then the language that you just read would replace the language in paragraph 5, which is directed to the federal government, which is, I think, the focus of your resolution anyway.
And that is, for me, that's the focus of this resolution, is to our federal government. We're deleting 4 and substituting what I just read for 5. And do we, Ms. Cook, do we have extra copies of this?
I just handed 3 out.
You did, okay. So members of the public, feel free to comment on this if you have a sense of this is not the direction we want to go. I feel pretty good about it as far as sending a message that I believe we're trying to send to our federal government. Next speaker.
Steve Argue. The so-called Patriot Act is part of a frontal attack on human rights in the United States that's taken the form of mass detentions of people of Arab descent without cause in most cases, the vast majority of cases, has included torture, has included the lack of legal, the right to legal representation, has included many things that are supposedly not allowed under the U.S. Constitution. The Patriot Act is something that we should definitely be opposed to, and I'm glad the City Council is taking a stand on this issue. I like the wording of paragraph 4, where it spoke in terms of non-cooperation with the Patriot Act. We have the U.S. government positively going out and being the number one threat to human rights in the United States right now. Agencies like the FBI and the CIA have been involved in the infiltration of political organizations in the past, and they are now. They were part of the bombing of Judy Berry. They were part of the murder of 40 members of the Black Panther Party. They are also part of a systematic repression going on against people in the Arab community right now, including activists for Palestinian rights. An activist was recently just arrested in Boston. Other activists, people doing nothing more than speaking out for the rights of Arab people in the Middle East and in the United States, are facing political repression. So I want to state very clearly that I'm in favor of you taking action, and the more action, the better. And I think the people of this country also have to take action against this war and against the human rights abuses taking place.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Anna Brooks, Mayor and Member of the City Council. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this. I didn't think I'd have the chance to since it's on your afternoon agenda, but I just happened to notice it was happening right as I was taking my afternoon break. So, just wanted, before I get back to my job, I just wanted to express brief support for this measure. It was something that was actually on my personal list to contact you about, but after the Iraq resolution, I got involved with local political things. So I think I leave it to your discretion, the language. I think you've been given some good materials to work with. Appreciate if you'd support this measure. I also want to thank the folks that let me cut ahead in line in front of them so I could get back to my job. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker.
I'm Ruth Hunter. I want to thank Mayor Crone and the council members here for the opportunity that we have to put, and I hope your support for this resolution you probably have in front of you, and it's so important. This resolution really tells it all in safeguarding our precious legacy, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And I'd just like to read something I wrote just last week on a little anecdote. So I want to tell you a brief anecdote. Several weeks ago, I interviewed a re-entry student at Cabrillo. She was speaking of her hope for the future and then said angrily, and I quote, "I am upset that I have a negative view of my government. I wish I could be positive that they were looking out for our best interests. The Homeland Security scares, the crap out of me. I took a trip the other day," she told me, "and while she was on the foothills of the Sierra, she saw this sign on the outskirts of a small town which said, 'Homeland Security sign. We will report any suspicious activity.' Council members, please vote for this resolution. Do not be a party with our nation that encourages snitchers, encourages our neighbors to become our enemies. Thank you."
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
And you're listening to the City Council meeting discussion oral communications of November 12th. If only you could have the same attitude towards snitchers on the mall for people sitting down and other things or having a political table. The same concern. Alicia, you've been listening to this you've been listening to some of this, and you say that in Nebraska they receive Free Radio Santa Cruz, and they actually like some of the people on Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really, really, really like your radio show. They don't really know much about it. None of them are familiar with the California life, but all they know is that, you know, there's problems here in California with homeless people, but they're all for, you know, equal rights and being treated like everyone else. I mean, that's how we were taught there. We have morals, at least. But here, it just seems like everyone cares about their image and all that. It's really not important with the community. You should think about other people. That's why snitches, when you can't even feel comfortable sitting downtown because you are worried that somebody's watching your every move. I mean,
well, you apparently were okay until you engage in the really serious criminal behavior of having a sign that touched the sidewalk. What was that about?
Yes, I had a sign that said, and it didn't even really say spare change. It just said, like, my own little thoughts and, you know, if you could help, then whatever. I never even spoke up. I never asked anybody to give me money. I wasn't even really paying attention to it. I wasn't too into it. I just put my sign down so I could itch my head. That's all. I mean, it was just a piece of paper to me. And some girl comes over, and it's a community service officer. And she's like, you had your sign on the ground for more than a minute. Like, that's hurting anybody. And I wasn't even paying attention.
What did she do?
She just came over to me and said, I need your name and your address and all this. And she said, you need, you know, that your sign was on the ground for more than 1 minute. And she goes, I told you that before. She'd always come by and she says, you need to hold your sign. But I was holding it, but it was touching the ground. So basically, I don't know, she sounded like a whole made-up law to me.
Well, the merchants need to have an orderly downtown here in Santa Cruz. People like yourself are creating the kind of chaos and disunity that, well, I think George Bush has warned us about. We need to be one nation united under God. And what is your problem?
Well, other people sometimes do it in a bit of an extreme, like getting in your face and asking you for money or making up a sad story so that they would feel sorry for you. But all I did was sat there. I really wasn't a threat. I wasn't bothering anybody. A lot of people came and sat down and talked to me. So I know they were interested, and I was there to tell my story.
And were you given a ticket, Alicia?
Yes, I was given a ticket. And I went to court, and I pleaded not guilty because I thought that was stupid. And then when I went to court again, the cop didn't even show up. Now, if it was me that didn't show up, I would have had a warrant, and then I could possibly go to jail. But, of course, the cop doesn't show up. Luckily, it got dropped, but still, she was missing her duty. I wanted to be able to say my part about it, but I didn't get to.
In a way, you should be glad she didn't show up, because if she did, the judge, almost regardless of what she said, would have found you guilty. That's unfortunately what we're finding in the court. So I have a bit of good news to announce. I was ticketed by five police officers for chalking no war on the street in, I guess it was March or April. I didn't chalk it on the sidewalk, you see, because it's illegal to chalk on the sidewalk, not under the law, but under the police interpretation of the law upheld by our local commissioner, or is it commissar, Junk Justice Joseph, as I call him. Irwin Joseph is a commissioner of Department 1, and he somehow feels that chalking on the sidewalk with erasable chalk, political messages, is now punishable as a defacing the sidewalk activity. So I chalked in the street, no war, as many protesters have done. And I was snitched out by one of the so-called hosts, as I later found out by the police report. And I was then cited by Officer Phelps, and a number of other officers stood by, one of them, Officer Brandt, screaming at Thomas Levitt, who was watching because Levitt was trying to take a photo of the whole situation. And Brandt was protecting his fellow officers by ranting and raving that he didn't want his picture taken. Brandt is an outspoken fellow, bald-headed with an Australian or English accent. You may recognize him in uniform. He isn't downtown now. But the there's really kind of, dare I say it, this repressive mentality that we tried to expose last Tuesday in the Illegal to be Homeless press conference. We're going to talk about again this next Tuesday, day after tomorrow, when there is a Santa Cruz night out coming up. That's a one of the sort of little bones the council threw to the Coalition for a Community Commons, headed by Cassandra Brown, and I'm not sure who the head of it is. I guess Cassandra Brown is there, as is Greg Kindig. And from 5 to 8 for the next three Tuesdays, there's going to be the closure of one block of the mall, the theory being to try to reassure the merchants that the world will not fall in, the sky will not collapse, if the mall is closed one evening. And the idea being, theoretically, eventually, to establish some kind of plaza downtown, even though that may mean that the big deal, the argument against the plaza has been it'll allow homeless people to gather. And, you know, that, of course, could be a disaster, ruin the economy even further, create a crime wave, and so forth. So, but that's happening on Tuesday night, and I invite people to come down. HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, is going to be having a table down there. We think we're going to be supplying a little bit of food. Take note, all you merchants. Apparently, the merchants are now pressing to criminalize food serving downtown. And we're going to start organizing against that. We're going to start letting people know that it's a more sensible, compassionate, and I think even a tourist-friendly approach for tourists to know that people are being fed, even visible homeless poor people are being fed, than to think that they are being run off by or suppressed by police action, or whether a person like yourself who may have been hungry. I don't know, were you hungry when you were holding up that sign, or was it for, were you trying to get some heroin? What was your objective, Alicia?
Actually, I was hungry. Every homeless person actually has their own little story that they like.
Let's see your story. Let me see your arms. Come on, roll up your sleeves there. All right.
Oh, yes, you got to see.
Hold her down, Scott. Let's take a look.
Go ahead, look. All those right, are beautiful.
Look at those tracks. That's incredible. Actually, I'm kidding, folks. I don't see no stinking tracks. So, there is a cruel and kind of robotic mentality that it's based on the evil synergy that happens when merchants and police and politicians get together and start scheming to get rid of groups of people like homeless people, young people, poor people downtown. They don't say we're trying to get rid of them. They say we're trying to create a friendlier, more business-friendly downtown, and that part of that is sort of moving people along and making sure that they don't cluster in areas in front of Borders and in front of the New Leaf Market and in front of the Pacific Trading Company, and then removing the O'Neill's Surf Shop Plaza area in front of the Cinema 9, so that's gone, and all you've got left are people going to shops and people going to work. And I guess that's how it should be in the minds of some. But I think for most of us, that's the wrong way to go. We have to fight that, I think, and hopefully we will. And I'm going to be down there at this HUF booth on Tuesday night. And I also want to announce, before I get my next phone call, which should be coming in shortly from Arcata, we're hoping to hear from a couple of activists up there fighting for the civil rights of poor people outside, houseless people, that there's also going to be a meeting of street performers at Tom Noddy's house. Tom Noddy is an activist who was arrested for juggling. He spent 13 hours in jail. He's more famous as a bubble artist and one of the authors of the Street Performers Guidelines, which were put together in 1980 and served the community pretty well for about 21, 22 years until Scott Kennedy, Emily Riley, Ed Porter, Mark Premack, the whole gang, decided that it was time to move along those guidelines and instead give cops more selective enforcement powers, which is what we have now downtown, making it, to my eyes, a much more difficult scene for musicians, and I believe that that's the perspective of a lot of musicians, too. Certainly the perspective of Mike True, who is a musician who is suing Sergeant Butchie Baker and the city in court for a false arrest when he was arrested for having his CDs, his musical work with him, his musical art. And that case is going to go to federal court along with my case where I'm suing Sergeant Baker and the city attorney, as well as Matisse Selman of Sushi Now, for taking my table down and putting me in handcuffs and taking me to the police station for circulating a petition in front of New Leaf Market. We, of course, have cases coming up around the move-along law, which says you can only be on the mall for 60 minutes in one spot before you must move along if you have a display device. And the Pacific Trading Company has been quite involved in, well, a number of businesses were involved in that, but this most recent arrests have happened in front of the Pacific Trading Company, where Steve Argue and Matthew Hartog were arrested. Matthew dragged off literally dragged to a squad car when he sat down and said, I'm not going to cooperate with this stuff. I mean, it's like Rosa Parks. I'm staying on the front of the bus. You do what you need to do. I'm going to continue to table on Pacific Avenue. I have the right to do so. I'm not blocking or hurting anyone. This is just simply wrong. You get this infernal machine that starts to operate where the police somehow feel that they have been given not just the license, but the duty to run around and harass people like you, Alicia, with your sign. Gray, this officer who hassled you, is not necessarily a bad person. But when she gets stuck into this kind of organization with these kinds of directives, she becomes a part of a very bad machine process, just very bad. It's one wonders how good Germans can become Nazis. Well, this is how it happens. And it doesn't take very long to happen this way, and that's what we have happening here in Santa Cruz. And hopefully, people concerned about the Patriot Act, which we're going to hear more about hopefully later. I stopped playing the tape because I realized we couldn't finish it, and I'm still waiting for this phone call from the north, from Arcata. Maybe what I'll do is go back to the tape, and until we get the phone call, we'll hear more of the Patriot Act discussion. I think the objective of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee is very laudable, to try to, you know, get the city on record as saying, let's put some teeth in saying no thanks to Ashcroft, Bush, the Patriot Act. We also have to say no thanks to Belcher, Riley, and the local attack on poor people here, or what we say nationally isn't worth, as Lyndon Johnson said of the vice presidency, a warm pitcher of spit. Frankly, it ain't worth nothing. So that's what I rant about, and I encourage you to keep an eye on that. Matthew Hartog's charges have been dropped. However, Steve argues have not. He goes to trial. He faces more than 2 years in jail and a $2,000 fine for the crime of having a table for more than 60 minutes twice on Pacific Avenue. That's a misdemeanor. Now, if, for example, I don't know if you'd had a sign touching the ground twice, that would have been a misdemeanor, but if you had a sign that asked for money, and you had sat down with it, that would have been a misdemeanor. And if you'd had done that twice in 6 months, that would be punishable by a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. This is clearly unconstitutional. It's a message you're putting out. You're not doing anything wrong. But the city, under the misguidance of a merchant mentality and a bunch of political sellouts on the city council, I'm afraid that's what they are. I mean, I know that doesn't sound very politic, but Scott Kennedy, for example, who will be our mayor in November, unless he moves out of town or does the decent thing and resigns, he's the co-founder of the Resource Center for Nonviolence. He's the man who brings over figures from India talking about civil disobedience and the need for peaceful resistance to unjust authority. He's the man who criminalized begging at night in 1994 because he wanted to do a kind of friendly deal with the merchants, and continues to make the laws worse, and continues to, he's the one who gutted police review. People who get into positions of power, unfortunately, change. That's the unfortunate lesson that we all have to understand. And it takes, as Theodora, the caller, was saying, movement from all of us in the community, organizing from people willing to put aside time to do that, to stand up against this kind of death-producing repression from the top. I'm talking about death metaphorically, and I'm talking about death literally. When they dispersed the Coral Street open-air shelter in 1995, Kennedy and Rotkin did that. 6 to 12 homeless people died in the ensuing months. Activist Dan Hopkins blames those two council members for those deaths, because had that encampment continued, there would have been no deaths, or far less. That was his view. And every year we have a death toll at the Homeless Services Center. And I'm afraid it's people like Emily Riley, with her smiling and her nice baked goods and her friendly attitude, but her criminalizing the homeless measures in city council, that give us this kind of grim situation, or let's say that allow for its continuance. Again, here's some more conversation on the Patriot Act. Before I do that, though, is anything that you, Alicia, or Scott want to say? You've been patiently listening to my diatribe.
You know, Alicia, I don't think you made it quite clear that Robert is much beloved in the heartland, and that despite the fact that he's not always accorded the respect he deserves here in his hometown, that people are listening to him in Nebraska. I find that fascinating that he's on the air in Nebraska. Can you tell people about that?
Well, I'm not sure how. I mean, he doesn't know how either, but on the AM radio in Lincoln, Nebraska, they can hear him, and everything he says means something. They all wish that they had some kind of a, you know, not really a protest, because sometimes a loud protest causes more drama than war itself, but the way he gets about things is he's factual, and he compares common sense, and a lot of these things are true in what he says, and it's like, I don't know, I guess they care a little bit more about their homeless people than they do here, because here in Santa Cruz, they often think that a homeless person isn't considered a citizen, but in Lincoln, anybody's a citizen if you live there. They don't care about any, they don't go out of the extreme to kick people out of their own town, but they wouldn't mind having him there, or some, you know, he'd probably actually become a millionaire if he were to go out there, and here you guys are just listening to him, making up your little comments about how he doesn't know what he's talking about, but really he does.
Yeah, I think the police chief would be happy to send me to Lincoln. I got to tell you, Alicia, I suspect if I got to Lincoln, I would be getting in the hair of the Lincoln authorities just as much. I think, I suspect that you sometimes don't see, you know, the mote in your own eye, you know, or the beam or whatever it is. I mean, the old biblical phrase about your own house looks okay. When you look over the neighbor's yard, you see problems. You don't see those problems your own when they're there. So I think I appreciate, you know, the fact that some people like what I have to say in Lincoln, and some people like what I have to say here, and some people don't, and that's okay too. As long as we all talk about these issues, that's what we need to do. And then we need to act on them. That's even more important than talking about them. And I do a lot of talking, and I do some acting on them too. So I appreciate your saying that. I'm going to roll through a couple of announcements here. I'm going to remind you that 11:45 a.m. Sally Zinman is going to be on the air if she calls in. I'm wondering where my callers are. They were supposed to be calling. They're a bit late. She is an activist who for 30 years has been fighting forced drugging. That's psychiatric drugging, where they hold you down and shoot you up and hold you in the psychiatric wards and hospitals. And she's been particularly instrumental in helping to fight AB 1421, the statewide bill that unfortunately Governor Davis signed, which makes it legal for them to use a weakened standard. The old standard was danger to self, danger to others, gravely disabled, to drag you away and hold you in a psychiatric ward for 72 hours or longer if they want to do a 5250. But she's going to be talking about the issue of not just what involuntary outpatient commitment means. It's now being used in Los Angeles, and it can be adopted on a county option basis. Santa Cruz County could adopt it. Supervisors could adopt it. Now they would have to jump through a number of hoops. Like, they have to provide a lot of voluntary services first they probably can't afford, but she's going to talk about that. That's at 11:45 today. 11:45 is the right time. Here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to, 96.3 FM. If you want to get some sort of preliminary notion of what the issue is, I wrote a long article about this. Well, actually, not that long. It's a one-page article. It felt long to me. On this whole issue of involuntary outpatient commitment in California, you know, forced drugging coming to a county near you is what the story is. Go to the internet and look up the Indie Media website, www.santacruz.indymedia.org, and check out the right side of the screen until you find the story on forced drugging. And that actually kind of gives you a good summary of the kinds of issues that we're going to be talking about today at 11:45 if you want to get some prep. Again, I remind you, if you want to check out if you want to get into the studio but you haven't got access to a phone, or you find the numbers busy, I said the email is rnorris@hotmail.com. It's actually easier for me if you can go to rnorris2@hotmail.com, rnorris2@hotmail.com right now. So if you want to send me an email and you for some reason can't get in, do go to rnorris2@hotmail.com, and I will keep an eye out. It could be our caller is calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
Barely.
Okay, can you hear me now?
No, it's still real quiet.
How about now?
It's getting better.
How about now?
A little bit more.
Whoa, I gotta do some shouting here, huh?
Yeah.
Boy, we can hear you. just try to listen real close, I guess.
Okay.
Who's calling in?
This is Tad.
Tad Roger. From Arcata, the notorious jailbird.
Oh, yeah, that's me.
So what's happening up in Arcata, Tad? I know we talked to you yesterday, or I did, that is, the Royal We here. And you were talking about, let me see if I get this right, a protest to decriminalize sleeping in Arcata?
Right. We're calling for an end to their camping ban. We feel it's cruel and unusual punishment. You know, it's the police harassment of people who can't do anything but camp to live. And we had a protest up here that kind of turned out interesting. By the time it was all done, it accumulated in an arrest and the seizure of our property again.
Now, what I read from, I guess there's an account of it on ArcataEye.net, is that right?
Right.
ArcataEye, like EYE, is sort of your local weekly newspaper, and that they described you as a right-to-live activist, and the story headline for those who want to get it is Right-to-Live Activist Mount Marsh Protests by Terrence McNally. And they, I guess this was like these protests happened about a month ago, or?
Well, no, actually, they just happened last month. We started protesting on the 21st. We tried to start protesting earlier, but the Friday before, but one of the local camping cop came and threatened us with arrest if we put it up, and we knew we wouldn't get out till Monday.
Put what up?
If we put up a protest sign. He said if we put up a protest sign, he would throw us in jail.
Really? He's decided the First Amendment doesn't really operate where his jurisdiction, or?
Well, it just doesn't operate with homeless people. This is Arcata. I mean, they shut down every street during the war. They protest on a regular basis every Friday night, for instance. They have a peace protest. Yet, if you're homeless, it seems that there's a whole other set of standards for your First Amendment rights.
To understand what's happening up there, Tad, can you tell us what kinds of difficulties homeless people suffer under up in Arcata that you've seen? How long you been up there, first of all?
Oh, I've been here about almost a year and a half.
And what have you seen that's particularly struck you?
Well, the sad thing is we have the Mendocino Coast winters where it's wet and rainy, and it's quite common for people to be thrown out of their shelters in the rain, their shelters being destroyed while they're in town. They've just passed a no-dog ordinance, or they didn't just pass it, they just enforced a no-dog ordinance around the local soup kitchen, so they've cut off people with dogs from getting food and showers. They ticket people for crimes that they don't ticket other people for in the downtown area. It's much like your Pacific Avenue is the Arcata Square, where they come in and they basically ticket homeless people only for dog violations, smoking violations, sitting on the sidewalk violations, and allow those to go to warrant. And then when they have special events, they come through and pick up homeless people off the streets that they don't want to be seen in town.
But isn't the mayor of Arcata a Green Party member? Bob Ornelas, or I'm not sure what his name is.
Mayor Bob Ornelas, he claims to be green, and he's really strong in environmental issues. He's just really, really weak in human rights and civil rights issues, especially when it applies to the homeless.
We're actually going to be hearing Dave Meserve, who is apparently much stronger on those issues, he is also an Arcata council member, in about 10 minutes. Unfortunately, you're calling a little bit late, so we're going to have to cut you off sooner than I'd hope. Maybe we can get you to call back around 11:30. You can stay on for another 10 minutes, but just want to give you a heads up there. What do people in Santa Cruz need to know about what you're doing? I understand you've been arrested several times already for such criminal activity as what? Holding up a sign or being present on a piece of property which suddenly they announce is trespass material or something?
Well, yeah, protested back in March. We basically, since Dave Meserve got elected and we finally had one member of the city council that would address these issues, we approached the city council, and they didn't give us any response, so we protested back in March. which ended up with me being charged with a public nuisance, which eventually got dismissed and changed to a littering ticket, which we won in court. I mean, we weren't littering, we were protesting.
What were you? What behavior were they ticketing you for?
Basically just protesting. That was the behavior.
What,
that
you mean like throwing rocks through windows and screaming?
No, I had a tent with a protest sign on it in their city plaza.
That now, wait a minute. Do you have a permit for that tent? You know, we are on, is it orange alert, yellow or orange alert, one of the two. You know, there are terrorists everywhere, you know.
We're just asking for the right to sleep. We're not asking for any kind of economical or political dissension. We just want the right.
Yeah, but couldn't you sleep
like
somewhere else?
Else in the country has.
What about Nevada? Have you thought about moving to Nevada?
No, I haven't. Arcade is my home. This is where I live. I shouldn't have to, you know, the right to travel is guaranteed to every American, and that includes the right to pick where you want to live.
Yeah, but Arcata is one of the most beautiful spots, I'm using the arguments they use in Santa Cruz, here in the country, by the coast. You expect us to subsidize your living here, to essentially pay for you so that you can park your butt in your tent on public property? What are you talking about?
Well, first of all, we're not asking you to pay for us. We're just asking for the same rights everybody had not 10 years ago. And definitely had 20 years ago. 90% of all the cities that have been founded in America were founded by people who slept on the ground. You know, this isn't a phenomenal thing. It's happened forever. And the right to choose where you want to live is the same for whether a person's housed, employed, unemployed, unhoused. These constitutional guarantees hold the same for everybody. What gives a rich man the right to buy up a beach or a cliff over a beach? What gives a rich man the right to cut down 2,000-year-old redwood trees? These are the same fundamental rights that everybody should have. And that's the right to sleep, eat, and go to the bathroom.
So you were doing a protest, I guess, in these are called the Marsh Protests. What's that about? The Arcata Marsh and Wildlife Sanctuary? Suddenly they're calling you environmental polluters or something? Or what's happening?
There was a piece of land just north of a sewer system that's set up in Arcata called the Marsh. It takes and filters the water through a series of marshes and puts it back into the bay. And north of that, there was a piece of abandoned, overgrown field that for about the last 30 years people had been living on, homeless people. And they came through and bought it back in October and planned, starting next year, to build a part of what's called the McDaniel Slough, which runs along the border. And the land has no use till next year. It's a piece of abandoned land. And they clear-cut it in order to chase out homeless people. They told us at the time they were clear-cutting in order to do groundwater tests, but they never did any groundwater tests after they clear-cut it. And then they just told us a couple of days ago that they were just then ordered to do more groundwater tests. So they lied with that. They just clear-cut it to chase out homeless people. And, you know, it's kind of they swept us under the rug and then they rolled the rug up.
You know, it makes one wonder, because down here in Santa Cruz, I hear they did the same thing at Poverty Hill and or Carbonera Creek recently. That was the word we got from our deep throat on the street. So maybe they're using the same consultant, who knows.
But I think that the tactics by police departments are shared. You know, with the Internet, I know that they keep handing us piles of infractions that we may, or misdemeanors that we may be breaking when we're at these protests, and they're all downloaded off of police websites. So I think this whole pest control against human beings is shared. I think they'd use the same tactics. Whatever they did to us, they'll do to you, and what they do to you in Santa Cruz, they'll do to us here in Arcata.
We're talking to Tad in Arcata, California, struggling for the right to sleep up there, the right to be able to sleep somewhere. Are there legal places for homeless people to sleep up in Arcata?
No. There's no legal place for homeless people to sleep in Humboldt County. There's no legal places for homeless people to sleep in the state of California. There's no homeless places for people to sleep in the United States of America.
Now, wait a minute. What about the state parks? Certainly you exaggerate. What about the fine
homeless... State parks or pay parks? Federal parks, if you don't have an address, the minute you step on a national forest, technically you are establishing a permanent residence on a national forest, and that's a crime.
What about state parks up there?
State parks, there are no free state parks in California.
Yeah, but some of them are relatively cheap.
Well, I...
See, that's when I say, are you asking the community to pay for you? Because most people, whether it's good or bad, have to pay rent, or they have to, you know, pay a mortgage on their house. Are you suggesting that people should not have to do that, that there should be a different system for everybody? Are you suggesting that those without homes should be able to sleep where they want or perhaps need without paying anything?
Well, I believe there should be places that people, regardless of their financial need, can sleep legally. We're not asking for fancy parks. Marginal lands all around the country for 200 years, people have been sleeping in, and they haven't been destroying them, and they're still land, and they're still there. And we're not asking for special, you know, brick buildings. We're not, for instance, asking them to spend as much money as Humboldt County is going to spend on their new petting zoo. We're not asking them to spend as much money as they're going to spend on their new animal shelter. We're just asking them to set aside some of these hundreds and hundreds of acres of land the city owns and allow people to sleep on them.
We made the same request in Santa Cruz, where we have 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people, and tonight space for 39 people on the floor of a church or a couple of church floors. And we were told that of all the green belt area, they just couldn't find 1 acre. Just sorry, couldn't help. No place to go. Catherine Byers, who was our mayor 4 or 5 years ago, just wrung her hands and said, there's no place for them, and voted to keep it criminal for homeless people to sleep in Santa Cruz. You think you have a chance in Arcata to overturn the sleeping ban in terms of, are there enough activists on the street? How many people are involved in these protests?
It varies. I mean, they keep, it's kind of like a wave. It'll flow in, the police will catch the people alone, and, you know, threatened. People have been threatened. If you go out and join that protest, you're going to go to jail. And so there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of people who support us, but actual activists, we're probably down to about a dozen of us. But Dignity Village got started with 8 people.
Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon did get started with 8 people, but it did have Street Roots, which was a strong street newspaper behind it, and they were pretty well organized to start with, and they'd also just won the Wicks decision, which was the decision that threw out the Portland law against the entire camping ordinance up there, although the police apparently were ignoring a lot of that and have continued to harass Portland homeless people under other codes. We're talking with Tad. Now, the story I'm reading online, which people can go to if they want to pick up some more details, is that a pretty accurate story in the Arcata Eye, or has it got some problems?
Well, I think that papers always, you know, twist things around a little bit, but we feel that that's fairly a neutral view of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's our contention that the Arcata Police Department restrained us from exercising our First Amendment rights in this action, and they don't mention a lot about that. They don't, for instance, go into a lot of great detail about where the marsh was, how long the police knew the marsh was not where they were ticketed for camping in the marsh, and things like that.
Could I jump in and say something?
Yeah, this sounds like Roger Herrick, perhaps?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Roger. We've got about a minute here, and then we're going to call you back.
Yeah, I'd like to just mention the necessity defense on the camping tickets.
You're an ACLU person, right?
Tad has already won a court case using the necessity defense, which was Icorn versus Santa Ana. And so what we're doing now is planning to fight each and every camping ticket. And I think ultimately the city is going to be left with the choice of having to let people camp anywhere they please on public property out of necessity, or find some place that is more out of the way, that is a legal area for people to sleep in. There is nothing but private property and public property. There's no other choice.
You know, we can talk about that and also the success of this defense in Albany, in Sacramento, and in Santa Barbara, and I want to talk to you more about that. Can we call you back about 11, or can you call you back about 11:30, thereabouts? Is that possible?
Yeah, can you give us a number?
You can call into the studio here if you want. It's 831-427-3772.
Okay.
Right now I've got Dave Meserve, who's probably trying to call in. We only got one line, so he may be, you know, getting discouraged if he can't get through to us. So let me ask you to call back at 11:30. We'll continue this conversation for a few minutes. Sorry we're so jammed with callers here today. I really appreciate the two of you being on the air, and I want to talk more about this issue. So let's hope you call back at 11:30.
Sure will. Thank you.
Thanks, Roger. Bye. Thanks, Todd. Bye-bye. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. That was two activists in Arcata. When they start to fight in court, the city starts getting nervous. That happened in Santa Barbara when Glenn Maurer, former public defender, started defending lots of people and winning cases. And it happened in Albany when Osha Newman and others, that's the little town next to Berkeley, defended the folks there. And here in Santa Cruz, we even had attorney Paul Sanford and a colleague defending the Camp Paradise folks. Junk Justice Joseph, of course, found that there were other places for people to sleep. They had other alternatives. He didn't specify what those mystical alternatives were, but perhaps in some future Tarot reading, he will give us that information, though, as we know, Tarot is illegal on the streets of Santa Cruz or requires a permit, according to new rulings by the Santa Cruz Police Department. So I'm going to kind of hang tough here and hope I can hear shortly from Dave Meserve. I'm going to read a little bit of the... I'm going to kind of review some of the conversation I had with him yesterday. I took some notes. I guess what I'll do is actually, this might be helpful, read this story from Arcata Eye, the online publication, which you can go to. I can check Google under Arcata Eye. I think it's www.arcataeye.net. I get my nets and my comms screwed up. Before I do that, though, let me check to see if anybody has emailed me any exciting messages, since I promised I would look at the email. I've never gotten a message in the studio online, but this could be a new day. It could be a first time. It's always the first time for everything. And doesn't look like I have any messages, so I'm going to go back to the story, and we'll hope we hear soon from David Meserve. This could be him right now, as a matter of fact. Let's see who it is. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, is this Robert?
It is. Is this David?
This is Dave Meserve.
Hey, David. Just talking about you. We had a brief conversation with Tad and Roger Herrick.
Oh, good.
And they talked about how they're going to be using a court process to use the necessity defense from the ICORN decision to defend every camping ticket, and it is their belief that in doing that, they will be put the city in a dilemma where they will either have to decriminalize sleeping in some areas or acknowledge that they simply have to allow it on public property generally. Do you agree with this assessment?
I think certainly the necessity argument is valid and will probably, you know, has already...